Friends, welcome. We are thinking about God's redemptive story and our sexuality. And in this unit, we're thinking especially about how marriage points to the gospel, helps us understand better who Jesus is, helps us better understand God as the one who makes promises and keeps them, the one who is faithful to us. In this video, we want to think a bit about the connection between sexual union and marriage. We want to reflect on the connection here and why it's so important. Oftentimes, it's one of those things I heard a lot of times growing up in a church, in a church youth group, that part of what makes a Christian sexual ethic unique is that we think sexual union is something that belongs in marriage, that it is not something that you take lightly, but that you should wait until you're married to have sex. And, that message is one that, as I've talked to people, my college students, other folks who grew up in a similar background as mine, a lot of times people hear that message, but they don't really understand why. Why is marriage the proper context for sex? Why do sex and marriage go together? Especially in a world that says, maybe that's something you need to explore before marriage, or that's something that, really at the end of the day is kind of a recreational activity. And so if your sexual partner and you are okay with something, then that's what makes it okay, is really just making sure that everybody involved is okay with it. And so I want to think a little bit more in this video about why sexual union and marriage go together. And one of the things that we need to reflect on when we think about sexual union is, does sex mean anything? Does sex mean anything? If you go all the way back to our discussion in an earlier unit about the story of technology, you remember there we talked about naturalism, this view that our bodies are mere matter in motion. And so there's not really any meaning to our bodies, other than meaning that we might each individually, subjectively give to them. And so our bodies don't really have meaning. Sex doesn't really have meaning. And what you see when we start to examine Scripture, we start to understand this theologically and biblically, is that sex actually does have this very powerful meaning. That part of the Christian vision for marriage and sexuality is that our bodies do mean something. That sex does mean something. And so there are four dimensions to sexual union that I want to highlight that I think are crucial to understanding both the nature of sexual union and the nature of marriage. And so the first one is that the way that God intended sex to be is that this is something that spouses enter into freely. So this is part of the nature of our bodies, is that God has given us this integrity as image bearers. That sex is not something that should be forced upon anyone. That this is a person's free responsibility to enter into, to undertake. And so when we think about marriage, when we think about sexual union, it should not be in any way, shape, or form something that is forced. It should be something that somebody freely enters into. And this is part, again, of affirming the personhood of each and every person. And so this is why, when you think about, especially, I feel like this, the last couple of years and the Me Too movement and this recognition that women, especially, being harassed, being sexually abused, stories like Larry Nassar, the USA gymnastic team doctor who abused over 100 women, 100 girls, just strike us, I think, as so problematic, because even in the broader secular culture, there's still this awareness that this is something that is meant to be freely entered into, that we are, our bodies, ourselves, are not to be exploited, are not to be treated as just objects for another person's pleasure. And so, just as Jesus freely loves us, right? Think back to Ephesians 5. Jesus is not forced to do what he does, but he freely says, "I will become human. I will take on humanity. I will go to the cross willingly for you and me. That's the kind of freedom that you and I are called to exhibit in our marriages, in sexual union. It is this free giving of ourself. The second thing to reflect on here is that sexual union is meant to be a total giving of ourself. And what I mean by that is when we think about who we are, again, we're not just bodies. We are this body-soul unity. And that when I give my body to someone in sexual union, that giving of my body is meant to represent this total giving of myself to this person. That there's a recognition that this is not merely a physical act, but it's a personal act that involves all of who I am as a person. It's a spiritual act that involves this depth of my personality and depth of my spiritual being as well, that I'm giving to this person. And so this dimension, this idea of a total giving, is really meant to work against any idea that, well, what I'm doing is just a physical act. Maybe on par with, for some, especially in our world's hookup culture, it's like, well, people hook up to have sex just like they might connect to play a round of golf or play racquetball at the Y. It's just this physical activity. Doesn't really have any meaning other than I kind of enjoy it, maybe get some exercise. That's it. That is not the Christian vision here. We're saying that this involves the totality of who a person is. And that really, that's how God made this. And so when we try to separate our bodies from our personhood, we try to separate our bodies from our soul and say this is just a physical act, we end up warping ourselves and we end up warping our behavior toward other people by seeing them just as sort of purely physical to be used in whatever way I see fit and then discarded. And so it's really important to understand that sexual union is meant to be this total giving of the self to my spouse. Third, sexual union is also something it's meant to speak to our faithfulness. And so here we see that actually in sexual union, there's a promise being made that to give myself totally to someone once is to say I am committing myself to you, not just this once, but I'm actually committing myself to you for life. That there is this, I think, deep desire that we have as human beings, not only to love, but to be loved. And to find and understand a secure love, a love that says, like God's love, I am going to love you. I'm going to be committed to you regardless of the surrounding circumstances. And so when we think about the marriage vows that we make, that we actually speak to one another, there's this sense that, you know, in sickness and in health, for better or worse, for richer or poorer. And part of what I think we see is that sexual union itself actually has this component of faithfulness built in, that I'm going to be there, that I'm going to continue to take care of you. And that's partly connected actually to this fourth and final dimension, that there is a fruitfulness to sexual union, that part of how God made us physically as male and female is that as we unite in sexual union, there is this reality, this possibility of procreation, of new life coming from that union. And part of the reason I see these as tied together is that when we think about this nature of sexual union as fruitfulness, part of the faithfulness is a promise to my wife that I'm going to love you, I'm committed to you, I'm going to continue to care for you. And that includes continuing to care for children, if the Lord blesses in that way in the future. And so there's a sense in which as our bodies are united in sex, our lives are united together in marriage. So when we think about sexual union and marriage in this way, I want to think about sexual union as a kind of body language. When we think about how we communicate, one of the main ways that we communicate to other people is through our body language. We look at somebody's face or facial expressions to sometimes to try to get a read on, if somebody is being sarcastic or if they're just being genuinely straightforwardly critical. We can oftentimes read people's body language to see whether they're discouraged, whether they're excited, whether they're upbeat. And so usually when we communicate with other people, there's a sense in which our body language, our posture, our expressions are a key part of that communication. You could even argue that's why emojis have become so popular, because if all you have is written text, I'm sure this has happened to you, because I know it's happened to me and just about everybody I know. You read a text sometimes, you're like, I'm not sure exactly how to take that. I'm not sure, are they joking? Are they not? And so, that's why we have smiley face emoji or all kinds of other emojis to try to convey some of this expression, the things that come through our body language. So I want to think a little bit about sexual union as body language, that we're actually saying something in and through this physical act. And again, we do this in a variety of ways with our bodies. Think about the way that somebody will stand up when the national anthem is played. We're saying something through our bodies about the respect that we have for that. Or if somebody puts their hand on their heart while they say the Pledge of Allegiance, that there's something to these physical movements, there's something to how we use our bodies that really communicates something. So part of what, when we think about sexual union as body language, part of what I want us to see is that the proper context for sexual union is when there has been this exchange of vows. That if we think about what's happening in the wedding ceremony, when people speak these promises to each other, where we say that, yes, I will love you, I will care for you, I will seek your good, I will be committed exclusively to you, that those vows are saying verbally what we actually say with our bodies in sexual union. So that if you go back to the previous slide, thinking about free, total, faithful, fruitful, that those meanings are things that we both speak with our mouths when we commit to one another in marriage, but that sexual union is itself the consummation, is saying that with our bodies. So that these two go together. The one is what we say with our words. The other is what we actually say with our bodies. I also want to emphasize again that sexual union has an objective meaning. This goes back to our discussion in a previous unit about the theology of the body and what Pope John Paul II calls the spousal meaning of the body, that our bodies, as we give our bodies to our spouse in sexual union, they help us understand that I really discover who I'm supposed to be. I become who I'm supposed to be when I learn to give myself away. Now, this happens in marriage. It can also, we'll talk about how this works, especially for single or celibate people as well. But this spousal meaning of the body is important for understanding the objective meaning of sexual union. And so Christopher West, in his book, Theology of the Body for Beginners, says it's not just that sexual union belongs in marriage, rather it's that sexual union, as God designed it, has an inherently marital meaning. In other words, that it's not just, sometimes people speak of having sex outside of marriage. Part of West's point here is that sex is a marital act. It's something that actually, again, is in our bodies, making these promises, speaking these truths that I love you, I give myself totally to you, I will be committed to you. And so when we think about this vision here, we see that part of what this is trying to do is actually honor the personhood of the person I'm having sex with. That we're not just treating people as objects. We're not saying, hey, do you consent to a one-night stand and then we're good? Like, then I'm not going to have anything to do with you. Or, I'll stick with you as long as it kind of works for me and works for you. But if not, we'll then kind of go our separate ways. This is saying, now this is each person is to be treated with dignity, with respect, and that's why sexual union belongs in marriage. That's why marriage and sexual union go together. Not because we think sex is bad or sex is horrible or dirty or something like that, but it's actually because there's this high value to each human being that says that, yeah, that's why we're not just out there sleeping around with whoever, because that actually devalues who they are as an image bearer of God, somebody worthy of respect, somebody worthy of commitment, so that if there is not that lifelong Christ-like commitment, then that's why we're saying, well, then there shouldn't be sexual union, because that's what sexual union is connected to. That's what sexual union actually says. It's also important to recognize that in Scripture, we saw earlier when we looked at Genesis 1 and 2, that there's also certain kinds of bodies say this. In other words, that God's definition of marriage is that it's this one flesh union between two sexually different people, between a man and a woman, between a husband and wife, because it's in many ways this kind of differentiation that truly images God, right? Male and female, He created them. In the image of God, He created them. So this differentiation, this diversity and unity images God, and it's also this diversity and unity that actually allows for new bodies, new life, that it's in the relationship of husband and wife, of male and female, that as they come together in this fruitful union, that children are produced, that new life comes to be. And so part of God's intention for life, for human life, is that as two spouses, husband and wife, enter into this and give themselves and their whole life completely to one another, so also then that as they do that, as they give their life to one another, there's the reality and the possibility of new life, new bodies. And so hopefully then when we think about the nature of sexual union, the nature of marriage, you can start to see why this story, this relationship points to the story of Scripture, points to the gospel story, that just as Jesus freely gave Himself for us, so we also are called to give ourselves to one another. Just as Jesus gives all of who He is, right? He lays down His life, He lays down His body for us. So I'm called in marriage to give myself totally and completely to my spouse. And just as Jesus faithfully loves me, as He gives Himself for me, even when I'm unfaithful, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. His faithfulness shows me the pattern that my faithfulness is called to have. And Jesus, as He gives His life for us, as He lays down His life totally, faithfully for me, He bears fruit. He brings forth new life in us by His Spirit. And so, in a similar way, when I freely, totally, faithfully give myself to my spouse in and through sexual union and in and through our marriage as a whole, so there's also the possibility of fruitfulness, of new life that comes from that self-giving love that I have toward my spouse. And so as we think about sexual union, as we think about marriage, we see that these things are meant to actually point us to the ultimate marriage, to Christ and the church, to God's love, God's faithfulness, God's covenant keeping with us, His people. Next time we're going to think a little bit more about some myths that Christians often have around sex. It's important to understand, I think, the depths of the theological and biblical meaning of sex. It's also important, I think, to have a practical theology of sex and recognize oftentimes the struggle that it can be, both the struggles and the joys, as people walk together, sinners following Jesus in marriage, seeking to live out God's will in their marriage and in their sexual union. So we'll pick that up next time. Until then, blessings.